Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hello, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. Happy June to you. It's the 1st of June. And we are happy to welcome back to our microphones today Dr. Anicero Daniel. He is a top-notch, highly sought-after forensic psychiatrist who over 40 years of experience has spent a lot of his time and amount of work focused on prison populations and the subject of suicide in prison. We've talked with the doctor about this several times. It's a rather amazing subject. It's one you don't hear talked about or discussed very often, that's for sure. But it turns out suicide continues to be the leading cause of deaths in U.S. jails and in state and federal prisons. And that's according to the U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics. The suicide rates have remained staggeringly high, with a disproportionate number of inmates having psychiatric disorders. I guess that's not too surprising if you really think about it. Anyway, although current methods and practices have been helpful to a certain degree, they remain grossly inadequate, and they continue to pose a serious challenge for the people who rule prisons and, the prison wardens. And Dr. Daniel, who has spent so much time studying this subject, has actually written a book, a very, very comprehensive book, entitled Suicide in Jail and Prison, Preventative and Legal Perspectives, a Guide for Correctional and Mental Health Staff, Experts, and Attorneys. And the book has become a bestseller, especially among those who are worried and concerned about this subject. So we're going to talk to Dr. Anicero again to get some more information on this fascinating subject. I ought to point out as well that he serves as an expert witness in legal cases, and we're going to find out how and why he would be called upon to do that and what kind of cases would call upon him to, present his expert testimony, expert witness testimony. So I want to welcome you back again, Dr. Anicero. Anicero, it's a little unusual name, Dr. Anicero Daniel. Dr. Daniel, welcome back to us. Let me ask you a little bit, I think it's fascinating to people who haven't heard you talk before on the subject. What is it that made you want to concentrate so heavily on this subject about suicide in prisons? What turned you on to this subject? How would you answer that?
Well, thank you for having me on your show. It has been a pleasure working with you. And so coming to the subject, suicide has been an intriguing subject for me, especially when I began working in the Missouri Department of Corrections and a local jail. Suicide occurs not so uncommonly, I should say, and the administrators, the care providers, the mental health staff are particularly concerned about the factors or the circumstances which lead to someone taking his or her life. So in the beginning, I was personally fascinated by the subject, because I wanted to know what happens in an individual who is behind bars trying to take his or her life. So I did a study of retrospectively of 37 inmates who took their lives between 1992 and 2001 in the Missouri Department of Corrections. I analyzed, along with the research assistant, the factors and the circumstances which laid the foundation for them taking this action. I have found that 60 to 90% of those individuals have a serious psychiatric illness, be that it may be it depression, major depressive disorder, bipolar disorder, psychotic disorder, or any number of identifiable psychiatric disorders. That's an important factor. Then about 20% of those individuals have substance abuse problems. That could be alcohol intoxication, alcohol abuse, opiate intoxication when they come in, or a history of opiate use or benzodiazepine use. Then I have come across several significant factors, including the nature of the crimes they have committed and the number of incarcerations these people have been involved in, the cell assignment, the placement in administrative segregation or a maximum security prison, or a history of prior suicide attempt. So I have analyzed these factors, which are, there are many more, and published a paper which has received wide attention. Then thereafter, I have become a member of the International Association of Suicide Prevention, which has updated factors, to prevent or the things to do to prevent suicide, and that has been done under the auspices of World Health Organization back in 2006. So by my publication and research, I have established myself as somebody who knows about suicide, the phenomenon of suicide, how to prevent them.
Well, you're definitely one of the world's leading experts on the subject. I'm inclined to, there are a couple of simple questions to ask. Number one, did you find that it depends on the amount of the sentence in prison, how long they might have to turn, to serve in prison, as to whether that has an effect on their attempts to commit suicide or not?
Well, there are two situations in relation to that particular aspect. Especially in jails, the suicide vulnerability is high for those individuals who come into a jail under intoxication of either alcohol or opiates or both. But in terms of long-term incarceration, those who have committed serious offenses, particularly sexual offenses and murders, homicide, and if they are placed in maximum security prison or administrative segregation, that increases the vulnerability, mainly because of the fact some of these individuals do not find a way out. They feel
exactly. Yeah, that makes sense. You've done a lot of studies about the methods of suicide that are attempted in prisons, and you found that 90% is by hanging. How is that generally done? Are there a variety of ways to try and hang oneself if they're in prison? What did you learn?
Well, hanging is the most dominant method of suicide in jails and prisons, mainly because they do not have access to firearms. But the administrators and jailers have become aware of this particular aspect because of the propensity of these individuals to hang themselves. They use the materials inside the jail cell, be that it may be bed sheet, they tear a piece of clothing they have, they can use shoelaces, electrical cords, and anything which they can use as the ligature. And they can anchor the ligature to any part of the cell. It may be the bunk bed, or it may be a light fixture, or ventilation grates, and the other end tied around their neck. Even if you have eliminated, most of the jails have thought about this particular scenario. They have tried to eliminate potential anchor points and the and the luggage, availability of luggages, but still people find ingenious ways of hanging themselves. It is
if not hanging, killing themselves as well. You have a section in your book where you talk about uncommon methods of suicide, and you mention things like this is pretty amazing. People chewing on their arm and bleeding to death, stuffing a T-shirt into their throat and suffocating. That sounds pretty tough. Those are just two. Head banging by running at high speed into a concrete wall, if they can get the room, I guess, to run that hard and do it.
Or picking up cleaning fluid from the housekeeping cart. They can consume that, exactly.
It's quite a remarkable study that you have done. Let me ask you, the results of this, obviously, as I pointed out, you have written a pretty comprehensive book on this. It's called Suicide in Jails and Prisons. By the way, is there a big difference between jail and prison as to whether someone commits suicide or not? I mean, jail, you would assume they're in for a relatively short period of time. Prisons, of course, you'd go there perhaps longer. But there are attempts at suicide. Even if someone is coming in for, you know, a really short period of time, a couple of weeks maybe, or a month?
Yeah, what we have found is that the suicide rate in jails is four times higher than that of the general population, whereas in prisons it is only 1.5 times. The reason being that those who enter the prison, they have gone through basically jail. They have been evaluated, examined for suicide potential. Their history is known to those stakeholders in prison. But in jails, basically, it may be the first-time arrestees, somebody who is of high standing in the community. They have lost their dignity, they have lost their status and freedom. They may be coming under intoxication. So the jail rate is always higher. That is not only in the United States, but across the world. Whereas in prison, it's much less, still higher than the general population.
And in your studies, have you found that the people, you know, the wardens and that the guards in prisons are very keen about this and are aware of it and are on the lookout for people attempting to suicide, or basically do the prisoners have enough free time that they can do this without being discovered?
Well, basically, suicide prevention program has been put in place in almost every jail and prison in this country as a result of several federal court and Supreme Court decisions. There are varying degrees of awareness of the potential for suicide by the detainees or the inmates. Some jails have put in a comprehensive program, some not so. Basically, it is a multi-disciplinary approach. It is a collaborative approach among the administrators, correctional staff, mental health staff, and medical staff. Each of these stakeholders have a role to play in suicide prevention. The more perceptive these individuals are, the fewer number of suicides occur. Yet, you know, not all suicides can be prevented. Maybe 20-25% occur without any warning. But the point I'm making is that by and large, in the United States, most of the jails have a relatively comprehensive suicide prevention program. They have appropriate policies and procedures. The correctional staff are perceptive of the potential of emotional and behavioral changes of the inmates or detainees who might end up killing themselves. And so they take appropriate action, but still we have a long way to go to decrease the number of suicide. If I may quote the most recent statistics from the Bureau of Justice, it is that between, say, from 2015 to 2019, there is an uptrend in a suicide rate in jails and prisons, with 2019 having the steady increase. We do not have the statistics from 2020 or 21, yet they need to be collected. So the most important point is that if the stakeholders are aware of the potential risk of various inmates, if they present some suicide risk factors, which they're all educated, should be educated and trained, then we can decrease the number of suicides. By the way, I want to make one more point. Training is the most significant tool to prevent suicide. When I talk about training, I'm talking about training of the correctional officers, of the mental health staff, training them of the risk factors, how to do a suicide risk assessment, how to implement the programs identified in our policies and procedures, and how to be perceptive of the potential risk. So training is the most important aspect in preventing suicide.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I totally understand that. Talk to me a little bit about your book. Your studies have resulted in the fact that you really went to work and put together this amazing book called Suicide in Jail and Prison, very recently released, by the way, and a bestseller, I understand, in its category, which must make you feel pretty good. There's an audience out there for this information, right?
Yes, indeed. Actually, it has been rated number one briefly, but remained in top 10 during the last 2.5 weeks. So the book gives an idea or information about suicide risk identification, how to perform a suicide risk assessment, and what is the best practices in prevention, and what kind of steps one has to take to save lives. And I also identify some legal principles of malpractice and deliberate indifference lawsuits. And finally, I provide input regarding how to be an effective expert witness. So basically, it provides the tips, techniques, and methods to identify detainees or inmates who are at potential risk.
By the way, there, among the many things you discuss in your book and you go into is when does suicide among inmates generally occur? When is that? How would you? What's the answer to that? What did you learn?
Well, there has been several discussion in the literature about when is it going to occur. So initially, we all thought it occurs late at night, early morning, etc. But it has been found that has no particular connection. The timing has not been particularly connected to the to suicide. What we have found is that the staffing, when a jail or prison is poorly staffed or inadequately staffed, that indicates lack of supervision, lack of staff to intervene. That is the time when most of the suicides occur. Some jails employ fellow inmates to keep an eye on the at-risk inmate. But even then, suicides occur. This is an important point. I just wanted to talk about that. When an at-risk inmate is housed with another inmate, the chance of suicide is remote. However, suicides do occur when that particular inmate leaves the cell or sleeping. So close proximity with another inmate is a significant preventive factor. So many jails employ such inmates.
One other aspect of that is, is there a determination on how long somebody has been in jail as to when they might attempt suicide? I mean, is it always for someone who's been in for a rather long time, or could it be somebody who just got in, admitted into jail and's been in for a couple of days?
As I have mentioned, jail suicides most of the time occur between a few hours and 7 days, roughly around 7 days.
Very quickly.
Prison suicides can occur at any time.
Interesting. Let me ask you a little bit about your, by the way, the book I would assume, is it available on Amazon, website?
Yeah.
How would you answer that? It is.
Yeah, it is available on Amazon.com. It is also available in IngramSpark. .com, but mostly is easily available on Amazon.com.
All right, let me repeat it again. It's called Suicide in Jail and Prison, Preventative and Legal Perspectives, and it's a guide for correctional and mental health staff, experts, and attorneys, and it's by our guest, Dr. Anna Cyril Daniel, who, as we pointed out, is a highly sought-after forensic psychiatrist. You get called upon to serve as expert witness in legal cases. Talk to me a little bit about your work in that field. One wonders, where would your testimony, what kind of a case would your testimony be sought after? How would you answer that, Doctor?
Typically, a large number of suicide cases end up in court. Is basically filed by the survivors or the next of kin of the deceased.
Right.
The main purpose of filing lawsuit are twofold. A primary purpose, of course, is to find out what happened to the next of kin, because our system is somewhat closed in nature. They won't give out any information. So discovery process is one way to get that information. But other information, other reason for filing a lawsuit is, of course, monetary compensation from the jail or from the prison. Now, I get called upon to testify as an expert, as an objective expert, to talk about about suicide, the phenomenon of suicide, the characteristics of suicide, what went wrong, what went right. If I'm testifying for a jail or a prison, basically they want to know what they have done right. Not every case end up in being found liable. The jailers or the persons are found liable in that regard. Because our system is such that jails and prisons, they do a remarkably good job, and you need an expert to point that out to the jury to say that such and such jail has done a good job in developing policies and procedures, in implementing that practice outlined in the policies and procedures. So who else is better qualified than somebody who has worked in jails and prisons, made his or her life work, concentrating on suicide? So that's how I get called. I testify for the plaintiff in many cases. My cases even out between plaintiff and defense side. For the plaintiff, when I testify, I basically talk about what are the risk factors this individual has presented in jail, whether the suicide screening was done appropriately, was a risk assessment done appropriately, what factors which the care providers missed, and those kind of things. So there are two types of cases, if I may say. One is malpractice. As we all know, malpractice is against healthcare providers
right.
if they deviated from the standard of care. So basically, that is malpractice. The other is what is known as deliberate indifference. What it means is that each prisoner has a constitutional right to receive adequate health care. If they feel, the family feels, or the survivors feel that their health care need was not properly attended to, and the technical term is, if I may say, if their serious medical need was not properly attended to, and
correct.
If the jail or prison had not taken appropriate steps to mitigate that risk, then one can be found liable as far as the deliberate indifference situation is concerned. So I testify on both these regards because of the fundamental right these individuals have in terms of receiving appropriate and adequate health care, including mental health care.
Do you find that most of these cases actually go to trial, or are they, settled out of court before going to trial?
Let me tell you, I have consulted on 75 cases during the last 15 years,
wow.
And I've testified live during trial only 3 cases. So most of these cases end up being settled. And when we say settled in terms of settled in favor, of course, the plaintiff.
I was going to say the plaintiff prevails in most of those instances. That's pretty fascinating. Yeah, interesting indeed. Meaning you did find some fault somewhere within the care that the prisoner was getting in the prison or the jail. Would that be right?
That is correct. Yeah, there are several scenarios. You know, I can find cases in my caseload where my testimony has clearly helped the plaintiff in terms of receiving a compensation, so to speak, from the system. And also, in the same way, in a different case, I may help the defense to negotiate a settlement amount far lower than the plaintiff has
been seeking.
Requested.
That's
correct. Yeah. So the expert's role has a multifaceted role.
It's I bet you didn't expect in the beginning when you got into this that this would be something you'd become an expert at, being an expert, witness in court cases. But, you've got to be one of the leading experts, in the world in this subject. So it's fascinating to hear about your career in this aspect of what you're doing. So, again, the book, has become, as we pointed out, a bestseller in its category, and I congratulate you for that, Suicide in Jail and Prison, Preventative and Legal Perspectives, and it's a guide for correctional and mental health staff experts and attorneys. And if anybody's interested in getting in touch with the doctor, you have a great website. It's prisonsuicideexpertwitness.com. Can't get much more simple than that. prisonsuicideexpertwitness.com. Dr. Anicerl Daniel, I thank you so much for being our guest today and telling us a little bit about your career and what you're doing. It's been fascinating hearing all about what you're up to. So thank you so much for being with us, okay?
Thank you. Thank you, Dow. It has been a pleasure working with you.
Very good, sir. Thanks again. Okay.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
That's it for today, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time. Till then, bye for now. Take care.